Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome everyone. This day is Tuesday, December 5th, 2017, and I want to say a belated happy birthday to the professor for making another blessed year for you. We hear your voices. Welcome to Life Success Radio. Our sponsor is Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. Now, that book is actually written by the senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington, and that book is really a treasure for those who want to not only understand the past, but the present and the future of what we need to do as Americans to help save our country from all the disasters that are going on, like, you know, John Conyers retiring and these other people, like, you know, that you least suspect are caught up in all these sex scandals. And we got bigger things to worry about than sex, in my opinion. So we say here, before we proceed, join me in prayer, and I will recite it in Arabic and translate it in English for you. So in Arabic, I say,
Ayubu bilahimina shoto nirwajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahir Rabbil Alameen. Ar Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki Yawmiddin. Iyyaka na'budu wa إياك نستعين اهدنا صراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين
The translation in English of that prayer, the Muslim holy book, the Quran, it translates in English like this. We seek refuge with Allah, God, away from the cursed devil, Satan. With the name of God, Allah, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to Allah, God, cherisher and sustainer of the worlds. Most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Thee alone do we worship, and thy aid do we seek. Show us the straight way, the way on those on whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, those whose portion is not wrath and who go not astray. Amen. Be it so, let it be done. Now let's get serious and have a real conversation here at Life Success Radio. Today is Tuesday, and our broadcast on Tuesdays is under the caption of Easy Generation, E-Z Generation. The slogan is Smart Minds, Making Waves to the Future. I want to mention too. Actually, tomorrow we have a show coming on. It'll be our last show on Booker T. Washington Speaks. We'll have our own up for next week, guaranteed. So certainly you can tune in to me on the Saturday night Booker T. Washington Speaks at 8 p.m. Where I'll be co-hosting along with the professor over Booker T. Washington Speaks show. So I look forward to that as well. And so on Wednesday, the show title is actually titled as Blessed to be Blessed. And we're talking about, we call it Prayer Warriors Moving, Prayer Warriors. What are the prayer wars are doing? Well, what it is, they're making they're moving forward without excuse. They're making success without excuse. That's what they do, right? So, as I mentioned, tomorrow will be our last day, and I'm looking forward to you know, the growth and development. But on Monday, well, I should say yesterday, our topic was senior life moments. That was the theme of the show. The topic is bloodline. Is it family or a conscious mind? And we had Shango speaking. Very nice show. Very nice show. And tonight I had his grandson scheduled to speak and present. And he actually had an emergency that took him away. Now, this young man is college educated at a private school, private university, and is very sharp in terms of his understanding of history, because that's what he studied, in history. And certainly I look forward to him making his debut on our show next week, perhaps. But in the meantime, we're going to deal with what is some of the concerns that I have about the EZ generation, the EZ generation. Now, this is very, very critical that they, the young people under 30, they need people with integrity to associate themselves with. Because, unfortunately, without integrity, no matter what their potential is, it will never, ever reach its full capacity. Because I've learned from master teachers, such as a professor, as one of them, that I really admire, he understands that there is a level of consciousness, and in Islam we call it taqwa. Taqwa? But consciousness is a self-accusing spirit that lets you know if you're doing right or wrong. It's really important. And today, young people, I mean, I had a situation today that kind of really shocks me. I had a young mentee that I was working with. He is kind of like a learning disability, and he would do deaf-mute discussion, speaking, but he spoke a little bitty words, and he had good understanding, so I thought. I guess a couple of days ago or sometime over the weekend, I had, it was on Monday, matter of fact, I saw him and he approached me and he sat down and was engaging conversation. And then I asked him, was he hungry? He said, yes, I'm hungry. So I said, well, watch my computer, watch my radio speaker, and I'll be right back. And I went around the corner and I came back in about 10 minutes with some beans and rice and some water and some fruit for him, and whoa, he was gone. So was my computer, right? Whoa. So I was like really perplexed. Why did this young man steal my computer? And I'm trying to help this young man. And so in any event, I had a number that he had called from my phone that I saved, and I don't know why I saved it, but, you know, sometimes things happen for a reason in my world. And so I called the number, and it was his mentor, which he had told me about. And I explained to his mentor what had happened, and his mentor told me that, wow, that's surprising. And so I said I was going to press criminal charges, okay? So today, which is Tuesday, I was here at the location where I'm at now, and I got a call from the mentor. He says, hey, I got him in my car now, but he doesn't know that I'm coming where you at. So I said, fine. So when he came where I was at, and I approached him from behind while he was fixing himself something to drink, and he looked around and saw me, and I could see his eyes really, you know, bucking. And I simply asked him a question, and before I could say the question about where is my, he said, I didn't take your computer. I didn't take your computer. Wow. I said, well, you know what? You are a chronic liar, and I don't deal with liars. But I says, I hope and pray that you'll learn your lesson, right? And so I, at that point, turned to his mentor and said, I don't deal with liars. Liars are losers. And, you know, I just appreciate you for making the effort here, but I won't talk to this young man. I won't do anything to help him. So I turned my back on him. And now, for me, that's really hard for me to turn my back on a young person who really hasn't grown in anything and hasn't experienced the fullness of life yet. But the point is I had to make this effort to actually show him, more importantly, that you just cannot burn bridges. So lesson learned, hopefully for him. Lesson learned for me. Don't trust nobody. Oh, wow, that's a hard one for me because I'm a trusting person. But, you know, so anything, I must learn how to reel in my trust and only give it to people who have shown me that they are trustworthy. That's something I really must do. So this Life Success Radio broadcast, as I mentioned, brought to you by Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a book that I know has solutions that we can help America regain its footing, I'm talking about the footing of what would help, for example, black people who are a lot unemployed in this country and really alarming levels. We could help them by creating career pathways, just like the great Dr. Booker T. Washington did in the times at Tuskegee University, in terms of creating industrial career opportunities that would help Tuskegee to become a monumental university. So we here in America, we have to set ways to create the tax base so that America can continue to grow as a country in terms of having the taxes of the citizens. And right now, black people, in terms of overall, are not really making those contributions as workers, as people who working jobs, paying taxes like every American does, except for the super rich. They don't pay taxes. They kind of defer taxes, and they make investments, and that's another story. So in event, I'm saying that that book really entails a lot of those ideas in terms of what becomes critically important in terms of the attitude of how we as Americans, African Americans, white Americans, Chinese Americans, human being Americans, need to work together. That's critical. So I would recommend you get that book and share it with friends and buy a few copies and pass it around and let people see exactly how profound it is. So we will be having next week on our own Life Success Radio, sponsored by Modern Day Achievers and a couple of other entities that include eGravity PSI, which is a public speaking institute, and we'll have that sponsorship highly visible, and we'll be having a lot of things going on that we're sure that you will enjoy. Because we are going to engage young people in the leadership responsibility, which, as a matter of fact, I forgot to mention this. Excuse me for oversight. Okay, so this is what the oversight is. The Tuesday show, all right? The Tuesday show theme is peer-to-peer leadership. Peer-to-peer leadership. Is it discipline compliance to present status, or is it forward thinking, action, and spiritual idealism? So peer-to-peer leadership, is it discipline compliance to present status, or is it forward thinking, action, and spiritual idealism? So that'd be the topic, and these topics will go on for at least 3 months, one quarter, and then we'll change topics, because I want to give people a lot of different versions of these in-depth insight that people will have. Now, also, too, I'm going to mention that the Wednesday show, which is tomorrow, our last show on Booker T. Washington Speaks, the topic, the topic will be solutions to psychological dependency and mental control of today's slave masters who use social media and religion to control our lives. I'll repeat that again. Solutions to psychological dependency and mental control of today's slave masters who use social media and religion to control our lives. Now, I know more than like me as an elder, 62, I'll be 63 December 19th, that it's more so the young people that are being under remote control of the media, which is using these really subtle, subliminal, and overt messages and demonstrated behavior of people who don't have no integrity about anything they do. On TV, you see it, you hear it, you see sexually explicit behavior. You see these talk shows with all this vulgarity about like who's doing who, who's screwing who, who's that kind of thing, you know, and going to court in public and making it a public spectacle about your relationship with your spouse. What's going on in our world? That's the question. Well, I know you know the answer. I believe you know the answer, that we are under an attack from the devil of social media. The devil of social media is causing the public to follow the bouncing ball of failure, right? So until we can get control and get our young people to put on their armor and learn that they have a responsibility to guard their minds and their hearts from the subliminal effects and the overt effects of the negative things in this society. Now, eventually, I know America will wake up. I know America has a great, great future. And as long as America treats the ex-slaves with the dignity that we deserve and give us what we earned in terms of the opportunity to compete like everyone else, when that happens, America will be blessed. Now, without America, you know, opening up its attitude toward people from the culture of slavery in this country's growth and development, America will demonstrate its unworthiness of the spiritual blessings, right? And that's a fact. And I really feel sorry for those who have been underprivileged for so long. Now, they're going to lose their privileges in terms of what is like respect in the global marketplace, because people around the world are going to recognize a loser when they see America falling from those people who are extremists in terms of talking about people's inferiority as people of color. See, this is a shame. Reality does come back eventually. It may take a long time, but it does come back around, and that's called karma. So we're hoping and praying that Americans will learn before the karma happens to take a precaution and learn a lesson from history and look at all of the different countries around the world in the historical perspective, right? I would even look at Africa and the blacks in Africa whom actually were running the whole country and somehow slipped and fell out of the garden, metaphorically speaking. Well, that's physically speaking, but metaphorically, I guess you might see the story of Adam and Eve, but metaphorically slipped out of the garden spiritually and fell down to earth under God's command, that they learn a lesson, and when they come back with the words that show that they are what you might say repentant, then of course they get a blessing, and that blessing is continued living in the Garden of Eden with your spouse, right? Right, with your spouse. So the point is that we are at a very, very interesting period in history, and we have to be very aware that this is God's time to purify everybody's intention. So don't you who think that you are not, say, vulnerable, think that you are invulnerable, because everybody has made a mistake, right? The difference is the mistakes that we make, you know, certainly God will cover them up if we do work. I say if we do work. Now, if you don't do no work, God will expose your dirty hand and allow the world to see the emperor has no clothes. So the emperor, being man and woman, who in this time are multicultural, and are reflecting the ideas of privileged folks, and they will be exposed to say that they have no clothes on, and they'll start feeling really empty inside as they walk in the city, in the country, in the world, and they see all these ethnic group people who they thought was inferior starting to grow economically, and then they'll say, hey, can I get a ride in your car, or how can I get a ride in the airplane? And we just got to tell them, no, well, see, you had your chance, you blew it, so suffer the consequence of being a, I say loser, but let's say of being a person who is practicing, you might say, destroying relationships between human beings by the different whispers that they whisper in the ear of, say, Kim Jong-un of Korea, and they go to he in North Korea, and they go to South Korea and say to the other guy in his ear, and they start them fighting, and then they go over to Palestine and they say things to the Palestinians, and then they say things to the so-called Jewish people in Israel. I say so-called because they're not really the Jewish people, but, you know, fine, we'll just accept that on the surface, but the reality, they're not really the Jew original. Right? So the whispers are going everywhere in this world. Around every culture, we all affect it. Even the Arabs who say they're Muslim and they say assalamu alaikum, there's some levels of this dysfunction in their disposition and attitudes because they have a tent or a taint of superiority in their behavior where they think that, you know, because the Quran came in Arabic, that they are the scholars in the Arabic when they are not really the scholars anymore. See, God can take and move his divine intelligence, his insight, his foresight, and he can put it in other people who deserve the leadership, and that has been now put on the hands of African Americans, blacks here, who are the ex-slaves, right? Now, that's going to be a really dynamic situation for our young people who are from the EZ generation, because the EZ generation are a multicultural group of all these young people under 30 who don't have the biasness of their parents, right? They are certainly guarding themselves from the biased behavior, but, you know, sometimes parents kind of reinforce the negativity in their children to say all black people are bad and all Chinese people are bad and all Mexican people are bad and all these other people are bad, but we're our good son and daughter. We're good. We're white people. We're of purity. We are white. We're pure white snow. We are like, you know, all these things they tell their kids, and they put that brainwash in them. So therefore, you fall into what this trap is that the devil has set up for every human being who thinks that their color is better than the other person's color. It's not based on color. It's based on attitude, internal performance, and how you treat others, you know, even yourself. How do you treat yourself? Do you talk to yourself in a cursed way, or do you talk to yourself in a loving way, and do you treat your family with those kind of levels of respect? So, and even everybody's being judged, even me, and I accept it. Right, God, thank you for the opportunity to judge me in my thoughts, in my behavior, and I pray that I get through this one day where that God will see that I am here to serve humanity, and I think that's the only way out for us, for all of us, okay? Tell you what, if we make a decision that we are going to serve humanity, we may have forgiveness. Now, I say that with understanding, right? Now, okay, let me say this. There's this man that I never, ever met, and I really didn't get a chance to see him in person, but his name is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, right? Now, I've heard a lot of great things about him, and I didn't really understand him, but I, reflecting, the man had a plan, right? Now, the plan was simply to get black people to stand up and be counted as men and women, not boys and little girls, and do things to prove that they or we understood the importance of doing for self. So I know in my thinking that Elijah probably, you know, a very deep way with me, is probably the most powerful leader that we've had since Dr. Booker T. Washington. I'm going to say that again. I believe this is Dr. Haleem Mustafa, Haleem the Dream Builder. I'm saying this. I'm stepping on a branch or a tree. I'm stepping on this reality that I believe that Elijah Muhammad is the most insightful leader of a very simple, simple plan to pick up a people who've been lost in a land as a fallen sheep or the always say that, the lost found, lost found nation, right? And so short of him, the most powerful leader is Booker T. Washington, Dr. Booker T. Washington, because he actually, in a time, actually left a legacy that still exists today. It's called Tuskegee University in Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama. Now, if you understand the importance of that university and you understand the people that came through that university to assist Dr. Booker T. Washington, and I'll mention one in particular, is Dr. George Washington Carver. Dr. Carver came to Tuskegee from Ames, Iowa, on a letter that Dr. Booker T. Washington wrote, and he asked Dr. George Washington Carver at Ames, Iowa, who was on faculty as a mycology teacher, right, instructor, and also ROTC on the same campus. So the letter that he wrote says to Dr. George Washington Carver, please join me. I'm summarizing it. He says, please join me in helping our people at Tuskegee, Alabama, who just came out of slavery, are like little kids trying to figure out what to do. Can you please come help us to eat better, live better, and to figure out how to make our life work? So Dr. George Washington Carver gave that letter to the president of Ames, Iowa, and asked him the question, what do you think about this letter that I received from this guy named Dr. Booker T. Washington, who's most honorable man? So the president of Ames, Iowa, read the letter, and then he said, you know what? He said, Dr. Carver, or he might have said George, boy, I hope he didn't. Please don't call him a boy. Call that brother a man of extreme scientific prowessness. That brother is powerful. Okay, in any event, he says, listen, we here at Ames, Iowa, offer you, Dr. George Washington Carver, fortune and fame. But what this letter reads to me and what it means to me is that Dr. Booker T. Washington is offering you immortality. Immortality. Okay, now, okay, check it out. So Dr. Carver left there and went to Tuskegee, Alabama, and spent the rest of his life there until he passed in 1943 on Friday, a Juma day, Friday, January 5th. Of course, that was probably like 25 or 30 years after Dr. Booker T. Washington was murdered. Well, I won't say anything further, but gee, why would you want to murder a man that's doing some good to help the world? Well, let me just try to back up on this one. Okay, this society murdered John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, wow, and some others probably that I don't even know. But point is, Medgar Evers, right, and some others. And so the Hater Aid, it has to stop, America. Please stop serving the Hater Aid. Drink some Gatorade, give you some new nutrition to flush out that poison that you got called Hater Aid with some Gatorade, right? You got it? Gatorade. No more Hater Aid. But the point I'm making is that historically, Dr. Carver, in the idea of his being given this opportunity to come to Tuskegee was to give him immortality, is embodied in the fact that January 5th was and is a federal holiday given to him by the 79th U.S. Congress under President Harry S. Truman. Now, that mandated law under Public Law 290 that passed unanimously in 1945 by the 79th U.S. Congress said very emphatically that all federal buildings would fly flags in half staff honoring Dr. George Washington Carver. Now, that's immortality. So we're asking you to join us in this mission because coming in 2018, which is like next month, we're launching a national marketing campaign all across the country in every medium venue that we can ever put ourselves in, and we're asking you to help us by, at least contacting me, Dr. Haleem Mustafa, at area code 650-921-5131. I'll repeat the number again, 650-921-5131. And we have another number, same area code, 650. The number is 630-0063. The repeat of that number is area code 650-630-0063. 0063. And then also an email for you who like to do email communications, and you would type in Dr. Doctor, like Dr., no period, and then Sam, common spelling, S-A-M, and then well, W-E-L-L at gmail.com. So that's Dr. Sam Well at gmail.com. Now, we are looking forward to make this a humanitarian movement to bring about the unity of America, just like the life, legacy, and legend of Dr. Carver proved to be true then in America's history. And today, we want to remake that history and take it to the future, because the only way we are going to survive as a country, as a species, here in America and maybe the world, is by being humanitarian-driven. See, that's the secret. When we come together as human beings under the spirit of humanity, we form a magnet of protection, and the devil cannot get in. Only way he gets in is that you let him in. And with the humanitarian spirit, is no way that the devil can come in between people loving, sharing, and giving from the heart, and saying we're finished with the attitudes of the past, black and white, hating each other just because of the skin color. Right? We have to get past that skin color and get into the heart of the human being and get into the mind of the human being, who the mind itself, if we program it right with the positive thinking and influence, the mind will change and the body will change and our society will change. And we'll have a heaven on earth. How about that? Heaven up, America, 2019. That's the slogan for this telethon we're doing. The telethon itself is going to be called it's the Modern Day Achievers, Dr. George Washington Carver, Dr. George Washington Carver, Global Prosperity Inheritance, Dr. George Washington Carver, Global Prosperity Heritage Inheritance Peace Prize Award. That's the event that's going to change the world. It's going to make the world such a better place. It's going to be heaven on earth, and everybody, we have to change our language, because the language of hello is no longer going to be accepted in this dimension of time. So now you have to say heaven up, heaven up. No more hello, because that's the devil's language, trust me. Say hello, and then see how you feel, and say heaven up and see how you feel. Say hello, see how you feel. Say heaven up, see how you feel. And you're going to put hello away in the dungeon of time. And then you'll be saying, heaven up, heaven up, heaven up, right? So in any event, I want to say the telethon is scheduled to happen in major cities across the country. And, we're going to actually look at the cities that are progressively thinking, that understand the importance of legacy building, because when we build legacies of what is the freedom of America's democracy, we give our young people the incentive to keep being a human being under the principles of American Constitution. Now, that Constitution has a strong core of truth in it, all right? Only thing I don't like about it is I think it's about the 14th Amendment talking about the blacks are still slaves, and I think there's another piece that talks about three-fifths human beings or whatever that is there. I don't understand that one. How am I three-fifths human being? And I got all my senses. You tell them I'm three-fifths human being, that means I don't have my senses. What am I missing then? My seeing? I can see. My hearing? I can hear. My speaking? I can speak. My eating? I love eating. And my smelling? I can smell you. A long ways away, you evil persons who's out here promoting this negativity on people, making us hate each other just because of our skin color. Now, what would Jesus do on this one here? That's what he asked the churches. Churches, can you ask a question? Can you answer the question, churches? What would Jesus do today? What would Muhammad do today? What would Noah do today? What would Abraham do today? What would Lot? What would Jonah? What would all of these prophets of God do today in terms of helping people? Would they say, well, I'm not going to help you because you are not from my race? They wouldn't say that. They wouldn't even talk about it. They just get busy and do it. So we have to get busy and start working on behalf of what is right. Forget all the arguments. Forget all the arguments in the past that we have been fooled into believing that people are different just because of their skin color. Now, my greatest friend in the world, who I never met, I wish I would have, is Michael Jackson. And he has the best kind of example that I love how he said it, is that look in the mirror. the man in the mirror, and that man means mine. And so the man in the mirror, that means the mind in the mirror, and that's not excluding you pretty ladies who understand. You pretty ladies, you have the, you have my mirror. I'm married, though, but don't worry about that. I'm just saying to you, without the beauty of the women on this planet Earth, and it's not about the beauty of the exterior, it's the beauty of the interior. The interior beauty of our women of all colors and culture, soft-hearted women who understand how to nurture a man into responsibility to tell him, go out there and make me some money. Whoa, that's deep. No, let's tell you what. No, don't say it like that. Just say, go out there and get a career and help the family and help society. Okay, that's better. All right. So, anyway, my name is Dr. Haleem Mustafa, and I'm known as Haleem the Dream Builder, Dr. Self-Esteem, and I'm also known as the Master Inspirational Success Teacher. And also, more importantly, I love this one better, I am the world's greatest inspirational success teacher since Napoleon Hill, author of Think and Grow Rich. Yeah, that's right. Somebody has been top Napoleon Hill in this climate today, and it's a brother like me I'm African descent. I have Spanish. I have white in me. I have a lot of mix in me. So some people call me a mutt, but I say, you know, I'm not in a rut. If I'm a mutt, I'm not in a rut. But you know what? I know this, that God has blessed me, and I want to share what he's blessed me with. So be aware, as we start doing our Life Success Radio, we'll have a lot of different guests coming on talking about the things that are really important to building parity in this country. Parity means equality, right? So we're talking about economic equality. We're talking about community equality in terms of the existence of communities that are looking prosperous despite coming or being in different cultures that, for purposes of my comment today, is like black communities are being so far left behind that it looks like we are in a dark age. So we're going to change that script because we have entities that we're working with, people that are serious, and God is on our side. So who can be against us? So with God on our side, who can be against us? You understand that one? Who can be against us? Okay, we're gonna make the Guinness World Record when we make this thing happen. We can say in 1 year the black people, with God's help, they influenced everybody in the world to come to the rescue and work on behalf of humanity. And America now is first again. But America will have to be first without white people leading it, because it's not going to happen again. You've had your chance. Now, be honest, you had about like 200 years maybe, or 250 years. But whatever it is, your time is up. All right, so back up and let black folks get busy and let us show you how to do the boogie-woogie and have those things, having fun. Because as a leader, you're supposed to be able to have fun in life. You're not supposed to walk around with a frown like on your face, Mr. President, Donald Trump. You have a smile on your face if you got a woman as young as your wife. Otherwise, I'm going to question what's going on, bro. I didn't say it, though, but I just said I have a question. You understand what I'm talking about. Okay, so anyway, we have a lot of controversy going on in this society, and we want to make sure that we give our young people a fair chance to be able to address what they need to address. So tomorrow, we'll have a guest tomorrow on Life Success Radio, which will be the last broadcast here from Booker T. Washington Speaks. And it's not a sad moment. It's kind of like, it's a reflective moment, because the sadness has already passed, and we have to celebrate the joy of the experience. And I have met so many wonderful people through the broadcast of Booker T. Washington Speaks, and the professor, in his kind, nurturing leadership experience, to take a person like me out of the ghetto. I'm out of the ghetto. Can you tell? No, I am, seriously. I come from welfare. I'm not embarrassed. But he took what was me out of welfare and showed me some things that he has experienced about leadership because of his career in the military. I never learned so much. And I'm so appreciative of everything he's extended, and we want to make sure that this information gets transferred to our young people so they can start having integrity again, just like we had when we were, like, growing up as children, right? So I guarantee you this,
no child will sum up, but generally children are born with a very kind disposition toward any other child that they meet. Now, they learn their negative behavior from their parents, who give them this idea that we're better than them. We're better than them. That sounds like the devil. So parents, stop telling your children that we're better than them because of your different skin or because of your money that you think it makes you bad or whatever you think that makes you privileged, right? Get rid of that one and talk about how about we share our privileges together, like our privilege to breathe air, our privilege to walk in the sun, our privilege to eat fruit off the tree, our privilege to grow a garden, our privilege to drink fresh water, our privilege to have company that is not out here to try to take our money. Get it? So we have to show a lesson about what it is to be human again in the 21st century, right? And I believe that somehow in the past we got caught up in some of the things of the Neanderthal, caveman, you know, me want your money, me want your wife, me want your this and that. So we just, you know, the Neanderthal have been stealing a lot of other people's blessings, right? So, you know, it's a shame. But we have to deal with the truth, though. At some point, we're going to really have to talk about American slavery for real, because it is the biggest Holocaust in the country of the, in the history of the world. American slavery is the biggest Holocaust in the world, not the Jewish so-called Holocaust, right? I say so-called because if you compare 90 million people in the Middle Passage with 6 million people in so-called disaster with Hitler doing what he did against his own people, against the people who are like more color-wise reflected of the lack of melanin as a species of people, and Hitler actually destroyed his own people in that sense because they look more like each other than they look like, you know, black people with a lot of melanin in their skin. So, but the point I'm saying is that we had a really nice year as we come almost to the end of this year. And the celebration of Christmas is something I just want to question with one thought. Was Jesus born on Christmas Day? Or why do you call it Christmas? Somebody shared with me that it's not like I'm just saying, symbolically, I understand that the best time for the harvest was in September. And so how did the script slip to where December became the day of Christ rising from, or being born. He was told that he rose on Easter, and every year on Easter, that same Sunday, it keeps coming back up. The third Sunday. It's not rotating like it normally does on every other calendar. But the point I'm making here is that Christmas is said in the Bible, more the Bible. It says that, let me see what it says. It says that, and I think it's Jeremiah 25 or 26. It says, why does ye or he or she or people go in the forest and cut down a tree and nail it to wood where it moves not, and decorate it with light and ornaments as it is alive and is really dead? So somehow, please help me. If you understand this one, give me a call. Let me know. My number is 740-921-5131, or you can call my other phone at 650-0063. We're looking for some intelligent people, not some emotional people who are just so emotionally supercharged behind the kindergarten lessons that they've been taught in this country under racism and white supremacy, right? So we have to figure out why it is that black people, more than every other people, believe that Jesus is God and he looks like a white person, when in every other culture, I know what I'm talking about, in the Mexican community, they have Jesus looking Hispanic. In the Oriental community, they have Jesus looking somewhat like them with some tight eyes or twist eyes and just the kind of hairstyle and so forth. But in the black community, Jesus is looking just like the slave master who took us through all this trauma, right? So we got to figure out, right, you can worship the image if you want to, right? But at least get an image look black, like you and me, or black like what's the brother name? The really dark skin brother. He was played in a movie called White Man Can't Jump. Wesley Snipes, right? Let's find somebody that looks like Wesley Snipes, or somebody that's dark like that has you know, some pizzazz and some bravado. Because if Jesus had bravado, I know he did. Because he come from over in Africa, he had to know how to dance and know how to, you know, chase the girls and stuff like that, and not be a person that is like never had a wife. Shoot, that don't make no sense. How a man gonna be a man and never got a kick from a sweet woman? No way in the world you can ever avoid that one. I watched my grandson at like 6 years old. I was walking with him in the city of Newcastle, and he saw his little girl with her mother and father, and I was stopping and talking to them, and I looked at him and looked at her, and they were Google-eyeing each other. I said, look at this young love. They're getting connected, right? So it's natural. So please take away that homosexual Jesus picture that you have, and he looks like I can say faggot, I believe. Faggot is a piece of wood that burns slow. Okay, so don't take out that piece of wood, faggot, that burns slow, faggot, and don't ever depict a man of God like a faggot, because that's not true. A piece of wood burning slow. You got the definition. Right. So here we go. So Life Success Radio appreciates everything we've been doing, and tomorrow we're gonna have a special show. And I'm going to see some of my friends in, around the country here to chime in and be a part of this whole effort. So I want to say that as we look to wind down, say in another, say, 14 minutes, there's some things that I want to make an announcement from, right? Like, for example, the book that I publish here for Life Success Radio is the reality book. And the Reality Books is the producer, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And I would say that please make contact with that number that's going to be said after this particular show, and order your books right away. Right? Order as many as you can, share them, give them away, help the world understand the past and the present and the future through that book. Because it's going to talk about the past, it's going to talk about the present, it's going to talk about the future. And you need to use your imagination to see past your nose to understand that the past is the present. The past is the present, and the present is the future, and it happens rapidly, so you got to keep up with it. So the past, the present, the future. Past, present, future. Right? And I think you'll end up like with that guy named Howard Hughes. He says, I'm in the future. 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 Right? He got stuck on sleep, though, but that's real, though. So the future is always there. It's always there. It's never, like, delayed. The future is always now, and now is always is, and is always present, and the present is always the future. It's not confusing if you got a mind to think, right? So in fact, we want to say that on Saturday, Booker T. Washington speaks. Saturday's show starts at 8 p.m. It's moved from 9 p.m. to 8 p.m., and it goes to 10 o'clock, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, of course, if you're in the Central Coast Central Time Zone, which I am here in the Texas area, that's at 6 p.m. Maybe not. I think it's 7 p.m. for me. Right, 7 p.m. now for me. And in California, 5 p.m. on the Pacific West Coast, right? So tune in, join the conversation. Have an intellectual exercise of intellectual, what you might say, surgery, analyzing the different subjects that come up, and you'll find that these intellectual exercises are really preparing people for how to be better human beings, right, on all sides. So, blacks, we can't be too extreme on conservatism, and we can't be too extreme on liberalism, and we can't be too extreme on the ideas of religious dogma. So that's going to take us away from the intention of us as a people talking. I got to say this. This morning, I had the greatest opportunity to ride a bus this morning about 7 o'clock, and I was headed downtown here in Christian, right? And there was these four black men on the bus. They all came in different times. And I was just so happy to see four or five black men on the bus at the same time in the same era sitting, and everybody else was sitting on the backside of the bus, and they weren't like black. But I said, you know, brother, I said, I have been here in Texas for just maybe about 4 months or so, and I have not seen this many black men at one time. It was really shocking. And then I found out one brother was a gangbanger. One brother was a brother who's from Texas native. They came to Chicago after 30 years. And two of the brothers, they kind of mentioned themselves in terms of their professional background. But the thing that really impressed me was the brother who was a gangbanger. Now, he was really a sharp man. And he said, I was a gangbanger. And I knew exactly what he's talking about from L.A., you know, L.A., Christian and blood. I didn't ask him which color he flew. I just know he's flying love right now. So we are on a chain, a peripheral chain, a latitude and longitude of a big direction. So black people, Europe, get ready for the chain. White people, recognize you're going to get in line and ask for God for forgiveness for your next time around. Because right now, black people are taking over. So I think it's said that by Bobby Brown, and you can listen to the song yourself, it's called Bobby Brown, Ghostbusters, we're taking over. Take control. If it's up to us, we got to take control. That's the reality that we got to do, black folks. We got to learn to sing together, too. If it's up to us, we got to take control. Now, you got to teach your children about that. Because whatever we're going to do as people, we're going to get old soon. And I'm like at 63. I'll be 63 this month here in December. And I'm not saying I'm old. People say I look 40. That's fine. I accept it. But the fact is that I do have a number on my years of earth, on this years of circulating around this sun in this galaxy that we live in. And it's like getting a time zone of 63 years come up. Now, I know that there's a different time zone that we're in. It's under the 314 dimension, which is the pi r square, or the Kaaba, the Ankh, and the circle, and the pin, and all that, and a bag of chips, right? But we got to recognize that nothing lasts forever, and we have to, you know, certainly do things to prepare the next generation. So please do your best to prepare the next generation of young people so they don't become liars and crooks and dope dealers and killers and people who don't know how to, you know, build a family and have a commitment to relationships, stuff like that. So the things that we've been messed up on in the years of us coming out of slavery and the pimp attitude that we accepted from learning from from our slave masters how to be pimps and hustlers, how to be bank robbers and how to be all these other stuff. Let's take another look at it and say, well, how can we change it so our generation ahead will never behave like that? Because that behavior is not human, that's the devil. So anyway, I just want to say to you, my last talk to you on this show here today, perhaps today, but tomorrow we'll have a show on the idea of on Wednesday, which is blessed to be blessed, miracle warriors, making it happen without excuse, right? So we'll have some miracle warriors on. So in my last few minutes here, I'm going to sing this song, or not going to sing, I'm going to recite this song that I wrote a while back. And it's called I Try to Be a Star. So this will be my closing song, and I'll talk to you tomorrow on this radio show, Life Success Radio, being sponsored by Reality Books, publisher of Bookie Washington and the Black Revolution. So here goes the song that I wrote called I Try to Be a Star. So I'm going to not sing it. I'm going to recite it. I tried to be a star, but I didn't get very far. I pretended to be a saint, but my friends told me, man, you ain't. After years of struggle and taking double, I finally came to realize I needed something more. I turned to heaven. I prayed that the Creator opened up the door. The first thing he did was to make me strong and let me know that I belong on earth so I can get a little more. That's why he opened up the door. There's peace on us if we believe that all together we can achieve. He made the earth, he made the sun, he made us all to grow as one. We got to save our children. So tell the truth. Take the time to train your mind to see the signs. Don't ignore them. That God is one. God is one. God is one. Assalamu alaikum. Talk to you later. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much. Enjoy the happy holidays, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. When I don't talk to you ever again, just know that I love you, and I don't even know you. That's what I'm going to do.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. This is the author of the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, reading from my book, from Chapter 5, entitled Education for Living. Booker T. Washington presented a very viable program for the African Americans' development as a nation within a nation. A nation within a nation. He commented in an address presented during his tenure as president of the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute that the educational leader must understand and appreciate the necessity for the races learning the difference between being worked as in slavery and doing for self. Booker T. Washington continued by explaining that the wise leader would not confine the Negro to industrial life, but believes that the very best service which anyone can render to what is called the higher education is to teach the present generation to work and save. This will create the wealth from which alone can come leisure and the opportunity for higher education. One of the most fundamental and far-reaching deeds that has been accomplished during the last quarter of a century has been that by which the Negro has been helped to find himself, to reacquire the knowledge of self, and to learn the secrets of civilization, to learn that There are a few simple cardinal principles upon which a race must start its upward course, unless it would fail, and its last estate be worse than its first. It has been necessary for the Negro to learn the difference from being worked and working, to learn that being worked meant degradation while working for self means civilization, and that all forms of labor are honorable and all forms of idleness disgraceful. It has been necessary for him to learn and for her to learn that all races that have gotten upon their feet have done so largely by lean and economic foundation, and in general by beginning in a proper understanding of the need for civilization and ownership of the soil. Booker T. Washington said that 40 years ago, he's speaking back in the early 1900s, 40 years ago, my race emerged from slavery into freedom. If in too many cases the Negro race began development at the wrong end, it was largely because neither white nor black properly understood the case. Nor is it any wonder that this is so, for never before in the history of the world had such a problem been presented as that of the two races at the coming of freedom in this country. He said that for 250 years, I believe the way for the redemption of the Negro was being prepared through industrial development. Through all those years, the Southern white man did business with the Negro in a way that no one else has done business with him. In most cases, if a Southern white man wanted a house built, he consulted a Negro mechanic or engineer about the plan, or architect about the plan and about the actual building of the structure. If he wanted a suit of clothes made, he went to a Negro tailor, and for shoes, he went to a shoemaker of the same race. In a certain way, every slave plantation in the South was an industrial school. On these plantations, young colored men and women were constantly being trained not only as farmers, but as carpenters, blacksmiths, wheelwrights, brick masons, engineers, cooks, laundresses, sewing women, and housekeepers. Booker T. Washington continues saying, I do not mean in any way to apologize for the curse of slavery, which was a curse to both races, but in what I say about industrial training in slavery, I am simply stating facts. This training was crude and was given for selfish purposes. It did not answer the highest ends because there was an absence of mental training in connection with the training of the hands. To a large degree, though, this business contact with the Southern white man and the industrial training on the plantations left the Negro at the close of the war in possession of nearly all the common and skilled labor in the South. The industries that gave the South its power, prominence, and wealth prior to the Civil War, were mainly the raising of cotton, sugar cane, rice, and tobacco. Before the way could be prepared for the proper growing and marketing of these crops, forests had to be cleared, houses had to be built, public roads and railroads constructed. In all these works, the Negro did most of the heavy work. In the planting, cultivating, and marketing of the crops, not only was the Negro the chief dependence, but in the manufacture of tobacco, he became a skilled and proficient workman. And in this, up to the present time in the South, he holds the lead in the large tobacco factories. In most of the industries, though, what happened? For nearly 20 years after the Civil War, except in a few instances, the value of the industrial training given by the plantations was overlooked. Negro men and women were educated in literature, in mathematics, and in the sciences, with little thought of what had been taking place during the preceding 250 years, except perhaps as something to be escaped, to be gotten away from as far as possible. As a generation began to pass, those who had been trained as mechanics and architects and engineers and slavery began to disappear by death, and gradually it began to be realized that there were few to take their places. There were young men educated in foreign tongues, in Greek and Latin and French, but few in carpentry or in mechanical or architectural drawing. Many were trained in Latin, but few as engineers and blacksmiths. Too many were taken from the farm and educated, but they were educated in everything but farming. For this reason, they had no interest in farming, and they did not return to it. And yet 85% of the Negro population of the southern states, at that time anyway, lived, and for a considerable time, Booker T. Washington expected that they would live, they would continue to live in the country districts. And he continues, "The charge is often brought against the members of my race, and too often justly, I confess, that they have found leaving the country districts and flocking into the great cities where temptations are more frequent and harder to resist, where the Negro people too often become demoralized. Think, though, how frequently it is the case that from the first day that a pupil begins to go to school, his books teach him much about the cities of the world and city life, and almost nothing about the country. How natural it is, then, that when he has the ordering of his life, he wants to live it in the city." And then Booker T. Washington continues, "Only a short time before his death, the late Mr. Collis P. Huntington, to whose memory a magnificent library had just recently been given by his widow to the Hampton Institute in Virginia, said in a public address some words which seemed to me so wise that I want to quote them here." And this is a quotation from the late Collis P. Huntington, the railroad magnate. "Our schools teach everyone a little of almost everything, but in my opinion, they teach very few children just what they ought to know in order to make their way successfully in life. They do not put into the hands of the children the tools that they are best fitted to use, and hence so many failures. Many a mother and sister have worked and slaved, living upon scanty food, in order to give a son and brother a liberal education, and in doing this, have built up a barrier between the boy and the work he was fitted to do. Let me say to you that all honest work is honorable work. If the labor is manual and seems common, you will have all the more chance to be thinking of other things or of work that is higher and brings better pay, and to work out in your minds better and higher duties and responsibilities for yourselves and for thinking of ways by which you can help others as well as yourselves bring them up to your own higher level," unquote. Booker T. Washington also recalled that, quote, "Some years ago when we decided to make tailoring a part of our training at the Tuskegee Institute, I was amazed to find that it was almost impossible to find in the whole country an educated colored man who could teach the making of clothing. We could find numbers of them who could teach astronomy, theology, Latin, or grammar, but almost none who could instruct in the making of clothing, something that has to be used by every one of us every day in the year. How often have I been discouraged as I have gone through the South and into the homes of the people of my race and have found women who could converse intelligently upon abstruse subjects and yet could not tell how to improve the condition of the poorly cooked and still more poorly served bread and meat which they and their families were eating three times a day. It is discouraging to find a girl who can tell you the geographical location of any country on the globe and who does not know where to place the dishes upon a common dinner table. It is discouraging to find a woman who knows much about theoretical chemistry and who cannot properly wash and iron a shirt. In what I say here, I would not by any means have it understood that I would limit or circumscribe the mental development of the Negro student. No race can be lifted until its mind is awakened and strengthened. By the side of industrial training should always go mental and moral training, but the pushing of mere abstract knowledge into the head means little. Our knowledge must be harnessed to the things of real life. Our knowledge must be harnessed to the things of real life. I would encourage the Negro to secure all the mental strength, all the mental culture, whether gleaned from studying science, mathematics, history, language, or literature, that his circumstances will allow. But I believe most earnestly that for years to come, the education of the people of my race should be so directed that the greatest proportion of the mental strength of the masses will be brought to bear upon the everyday practical things of life, upon something that is needed to be done, and something which they will be permitted to do in the community where they reside. And just the same with the professional class which the race needs and must have, I would say give the men and women of that class, too, the training which will best fit them to perform in the most successful manner the service which the race demands. I would not confine the Negro race to industrial life, not even to agriculture, for example, although I believe that by far the greater part of the Negro race is best off in the country districts and must and should continue to live there. But I would teach the race that in industry the foundation must be laid, that the very best service which anyone can render to what is called the higher education is to teach the present generation to provide a material or industrial foundation. On such a foundation as this will grow habits of thrift, a love of work, economy, ownership of property, and bank accounts. And out of it, in the future, will grow practical education, professional education, positions of public responsibility, and out of it will grow moral and religious strength. Out of it will grow wealth, from which alone can come leisure and the opportunity for the enjoyment of literature and the fine arts. In the words of the late beloved Frederick Douglass, quote, every blow of the sledgehammer wielded by a black arm, a brown arm, is a powerful blow in the support of our cause. Every colored mechanic is by virtue of circumstances an elevator of his race. Every house built by a black man is a strong tower against the allied hosts of prejudice. It is impossible for us to attach too much importance to this aspect of the subject. Without industrial development, there can be no wealth, and without wealth, there can be no leisure. Without leisure, no opportunity for thoughtful reflection and the cultivation of the higher arts. Unquote. Booker T. Washington repeatedly reminded his questioners, saying, I would set no limits to the attainments of the Negro in arts, in letters, or statesmanship, but I believe the surest way to reach those ends is by laying the foundation in the little things of life and that lie immediately about one's door. I believe the surest way to reach those goals is by laying the foundation in the little things of life that lie immediately about one's door. I plead for industrial education and industrial development, the building of industries, factories, farms, service occupations for the Negro, not because I want to cramp him, but because I want to free him. I want to see him enter the all-powerful business and commercial worlds. It was such combined mental, moral, and industrial education which gave the late General Samuel Chapman Armstrong, the founder of the Hampton University, which the late Samuel Chapman Armstrong set out to give at the Hampton Institute when he established that school 30 years ago. And this is, again, Booker T. Washington speaking in the early 1900s, or late 1800s. The Hampton Institute has continued along the lines laid down by its great founder, and now each year an increasing number of similar schools are being established in the South for the people of both races. Early in the history of the Tuskegee Institute, we began to combine industrial training with mental and moral culture. Our first efforts were in the direction of agriculture, and we began teaching this with no appliances except one hoe and a blind mule. From this small beginning, we have grown until now the Institute owns 2,000 acres of land, 800 of which are cultivated each year by the young men of the school. We began teaching wheelwrighting and blacksmithing in a small way to the men, and laundry work, cooking and sewing and housekeeping to the young women. The 1,400 and over young men and women who attended the school during the last school year received instruction, in addition to academic and religious training, in 33 trades and industries, including carpentry, blacksmithing, printing, wheelwriting, harnessing, painting, machinery, founding, shoemaking, brick masonry and brick making, plastering, sawmilling, tinsmithing, tailoring, mechanical and architectural drawing, electrical and steam engineering, or automotive engineering, canning, sewing, dressmaking, millinery, hat making, cooking, laundry, and housekeeping, mattress making, basketry, nursing, agriculture, dairying, and stock raising, as well as horticulture. Not only do the students receive instruction in these trades, but they do actual work, by means of which more than half of them pay some part or all of their expenses while remaining at the school. Of the 60 buildings belonging to the school, all but four were almost wholly erected by the students as part of their industrial education. Even the bricks which go into the walls are made by students in the school's brickyard, in which last year they manufactured 2 million bricks. When we first began this work at Tuskegee and the idea got spread among the people of my race that the students who came to the Tuskegee School were to be taught industries in connection with their academic studies, were in other words to be taught to work, I received a great many verbal messages and letters from parents informing me that they wanted their children taught books, but not how to work. This protest went on for 3 or 4 years, but I am glad to be able to say now that our people have very generally been educated to a point where they see their own needs and conditions so clearly that it has been several years since we have had a single protest from parents against the teaching of industries, and now there is a positive enthusiasm for it. In fact, public sentiment among the students at Tuskegee is now so strong for industrial training that it would hardly permit a student to remain on the grounds who was unwilling to labor. It seems to me that too often mere book education leaves the Negro young man or woman in a weak position. For example, I have seen a Negro girl taught by her mother to help her in doing laundry work at home. Later, when this same girl was graduated from the public schools or a high school and return home, she finds herself educated out of sympathy with laundry work, and yet she is not able to find anything to do which seems in keeping with the cost and character of her education. Under these circumstances, we cannot be surprised if she does not fulfill the expectations made for her. What should have been done for her, it seems to me, was to give her, along with her academic education, thorough training in the latest and best methods of laundry work, so that she could have put so much skill and intelligence into it that the work would have been lifted out from the plane of drudgery. The home which she would then have been able to found by the results of her work would have enabled her to help her children to take a still more responsible position in life. Almost from the first, Tuskegee has kept in mind, and I think this should be the policy of all industrial schools, fitting students for occupations which would be open to them in their home communities. Some years ago, we noted the fact that there was beginning to be a demand in the South for men to operate dairies in a skillful modern manner. We opened a dairy department in connection with the school where a number of young men could have instruction in the latest and most scientific methods of dairy work. At present, we have calls mainly from southern white men for twice as many dairymen as we are able to supply. What is equally satisfactory, the reports which come to us indicate that our young men are giving the highest satisfaction and are fast changing and improving the dairy product in the communities into which they go. I use the dairy here as an example. What I've said of this is equally true of many other industries which we teach. Aside from the economic value of this work, I cannot but believe, and my observation confirms me in my belief, that as we continue to place Negro men and women of intelligence, religion, modesty, conscience, and skill in every community in the South who will prove by actual results their value to the community. I cannot but believe, I say, that this will constitute a solution to many of the present political and social difficulties. Many seem to think that industrial education is meant to make the Negro work as he worked in the days of slavery. This is far from my conception of industrial education. If this training is worth anything to the Negro, it consists of in teaching him how not to work, but how to make the forces of nature, air and steam and water and horsepower and electricity, work for him. If it has any value, it is in lifting labor out of the toil and drudgery into that beautiful and dignified plane of excellence. The Negro in the South works, and he works hard, and she works hard, but too often his or her ignorance and lack of skill causes him or her to do their work in the most costly and shiftless manner, and this keeps them near the bottom of the ladder in the economic world. I have not emphasized particularly in these pages the great need of training the Negro in agriculture, but I believe that this branch of industrial education does need very great emphasis. We're going to stop right there. We're going to end our reading of my book for now, and we'll resume at another time. But we certainly want to encourage you to stay tuned and listen to our commercial for the book so you can find out, again, how to order the book to put it in your library. Thank you very much. This is Marshall Washington Cabinets, the author of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, also founding owner of Reality Books Publications. And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinets Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Well, that's all for tonight, and we hope that you will tune in tomorrow evening to Booker T. Washington Speaks, our special weekly broadcast featuring on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, Life Success Radio with Dr. Haleem Mustafa, the Dream Builder, followed by Booker T. Washington Speaks, advertising Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America, published by Reality Books Publications. And the book is authored by the senior great-grandson of the Honorable Booker T. Washington. Thank you for listening. And join us again tomorrow night at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern for Life Success Radio. Good night, and thank you.